Maybe you have an idea to make a ball gown out of bottle caps, but you don't have the years it'll take to collect them. Or maybe you have a giant sack of bottle caps sitting around the house and it's just such a shame to throw them away. Maybe you've been crafting all your life, or maybe you're still struggling with macaroni necklaces. There is a place for you. It's called Scrap Humboldt, and today we have Reworkshop coordinator Lexi Fisher here to take some of the mystery out of DIY and give us a few clues to making something we won't be embarrassed to give. I'm your host, Emma Brakan, and that's what's coming up next on Through the Eyes of Women, right here and now on KHSU.
Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women, a program for, about, and by women. News and interviews concerning the lives and times of women, local, national, and international.
I'd like to dedicate this episode of Through the Eyes of Women to my little brother, who for much of his life has suffered through some of my absolute worst craft projects in the name of holiday cheer and misplaced generosity. He's never said an unkind word, but we all know that mineral oil lava lamp in the mason jar was unforgivable. In my defense, it did look much better on the TV show that gave me the idea, but I still regret it to this day. Fortunately for little brothers everywhere, it does not have to happen again. This holiday season can be better. There's a place in Arcata for people with big ideas, small budgets, and varying skill sets. It's called Scrap Humboldt, and we've got Lexi Fisher here to tell us all about it. Good morning, Lexi. Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women.
Hello. Thank you.
Okay, let's start at the very beginning. What is Scrap?
Well, Scrap Humboldt, they're located on kind of South G area, the south area of Arcata. And Scrap is a nonprofit. They are probably best described really by their mission statement, I'd say. Their mission is to inspire creative reuse and environmentally sustainable behavior by providing education programs and affordable materials to the community.
So when I'm cleaning out Grandpa's garage and I come across that hefty bag filled to the top with bottle caps, why am I bringing them to Scrap?
Also, you know, the reason that Scrap exists is to divert all of those items from just getting dumped in the trash. You know, like somebody with their bottle cap collection, you know, a lot of places that take donations of all kinds still won't take several pounds of bottle caps, probably. But this is the kind of place where you are going to get to donate. The people down the line will get to buy either small portions or large portions of this stuff that most thrift stores or whatever else place takes donations won't have a very developed craft section or art section. They spend a lot of their space management on different areas, and this one's just the art section of a thrift store or just the art section of a donation center. Once you go in there, once you finally find your reason, whether it's with your bag of bottle caps or if you finally find a class that I've tried to promote vigorously, or, you know, if you're like, hey, they said binders and I don't even craft, but I kind of just need some binders. Once you get in there, you'll kind of see that it's a pretty useful place. It's a good resource to know about. So what I do is I try to get people in there and make things with their hands out of basically trash, cleanish trash. Trying to get people to, you know, not buy brand new everything and then cut it up into pieces and, you know, make maybe lava lamps out of oil or
mineral oil and mason jars, Lexi.
Hey.
There was glitter involved, and I'm telling you, it looked fantastic on the Learning Channel.
Everything's
or wherever
better
I saw
with
it.
Glitter. That's true.
I don't even know if I told my brother what it is. I think I just gave it to him, and he's probably still
What's
wondering.
This blob?
Tell me if I'm understanding correctly what Scrap is. I'm seeing a studio space for crafters of all
Correct.
Ages, genders, and skill levels. I'm seeing a store, a thrift shop point where we can donate or pick up all kinds of, what am I going to pick up there to craft with? What am I going to get?
Well, you know, it always changes. It's based on our donations, but we accept anything that you would normally find in a craft store to begin with. So, you know, if you go to any basic nationwide craft chain, hopefully we sell the same things. But, you know, it might not be a whole one. If you want to go buy yarn, you might buy 3 half skeins of yarn of the color you'd like, not 2 whole skeins for full price. We'll give you a deep discount on the half skeins. But we also sell, you know, kind of just odds and ends that we think could be creatively reused. There's a lot of metal odds and ends. There's a bunch of corks all the time, wine corks. And we do a lot of office supplies people can go in and get their pens and crayons and chalk and binders and paper, a lot of books. It's quite a range of items there.
What kind of books?
Most of the books that we have there are crafting books and tutorial books.
Kind of a one-stop creativity center. We've got the supply shop, the studio, and we've got classes that you coordinate. Lexi, you are Scrap's reworkshop coordinator, is that right?
That is correct.
You run workshops helping people turn things into other things, yes.
Correct.
So, Lexi, who is Scrap intended for?
I wouldn't really know who Scrap isn't intended for. I'd say pretty much everybody, keeping this in mind that we're in Arcata and it's a pretty, you know, people say an artist community or, you know, pretty creative all around. People usually don't mind wielding a pair of scissors and, you know, a glue stick. I've seen people of all shapes and ages and sizes in there using the space and buying from the space. It's not intended to be for a certain age or group of people at all. It's for everybody.
And then why are we doing this? What is that intrinsic value of the gift made by your own big sister's hands?
It's great to have handmade stuff. I mean, I've always, and a lot of people I've known have always preferred that endearing thing that's homemade.
And what if I've never made anything before? What if I'm not even sure that I can make something?
Well, if you can sit down and use your hands, we're solid. We can get you with a thing, a thing to bring home. And the point is, you know, you come and this is just step one. And everybody who's ever crafted, usually they're pretty terrible the first few times. And it's not a bad thing to be, even if you're not 6 when you're doing it the first time, even if you're 26 or 46, if it's your first time making that particular craft, there's no reason to be ashamed that it's not as good as the instructors or something. You know, we want your first craft to be terrible so that your second, third, fourth, and 20th craft can be absolutely great. And those first crafts are the ones that go to the little brothers.
That is a really comforting thing to hear. We want your first crafts to be terrible. That really takes a lot of the pressure off, Lexi. Is this an actual philosophy that you have?
Well, I've taught a few craft classes now, and I actually do say that a lot of people ask me very detailed questions so that they can get that exact detail of that craft perfect at that moment. And I say, you know, I think you might just have to try it out. And then if you do it wrong, maybe backpedal a bit. Or if you get it right, then you've learned something yourself and how your own hands work, and you're developing your own method of making this. And then I do remind everybody, I bring in examples of my earlier crafts of that particular craft and say, I'll show you the part that you're at, and this is where I messed up. So I'm going to help you try to step over that portion, but don't be mad if your first 3 blah, blah, blahs seem not perfect to you. Because if they're not perfect, you're actually on the right track. You're critiquing yourself, and you're going to get better. If you think they're perfect, there's really not much improvement that's going to happen.
So if I'm just completely skilled and experienced DIY person and I know exactly what I'm doing and I've got all my own tools, I might still want to come to Scrap?
Absolutely. If you're so skilled that, you know, you need to have specific tools that we certainly don't have, then, you know, if you wanted to do your prep work there, or, you know, there's always a thing you can do with several tables and basic crafting tools. Any person in any respect can have your sandpaper there or your scissors, or if you're working with paper, it's like a paper heaven.
Lexi, do you have any crafting disaster stories to make us feel a little bit better about our own foibles?
I mean, there's certainly things I've made that I've never used. I don't know if there's anything I've just taken and just thrown away or anything.
Well, do you ever get to a stuck point where you're beginning to get a little insecure about a project and wonder if it's actually going to turn out?
Yes, I have. And usually if I'm, you know, a quarter of the way into a project and I think it's just going to be hideous, maybe I chose the wrong colors, maybe, you know, I'm using stretchy fabric for something that should just not be stretchy or something like that, I'll usually, you know, either try to sacrifice it and cut it up into bits that I can actually use, or paste it onto a sweater to make an ugly sweater, you know, try to use it for something else, you know, I like to make everything really comical and funny. So if things go terrible, it's kind of nice to make everything into a joke.
And have you ever just gotten in just over your head and realized something akin to, I can't use a Dremel tool. What was I thinking?
I've never hurt myself with a tool.
Not even a little?
Probably like poked a finger, but you know, nothing like terrible. I'm really good at wearing safety goggles and protective wear because if I work with my hands so frequently, it would just be really bad to hurt my eyes or my hands. So I'm always really good at protecting myself, but yeah, there's certainly some tools I'm sure I've picked up and I'm just, you know, for one, I'm left-handed. So there are some tools that are definitely intended for right-handed people. And so I've tried to use them and I'm like, you know, I'm just going to develop carpal tunnel right here. So I'm just going to stop this one right now.
What's one of your favorite things that you've made?
Well, I'm really into dinosaurs and I make a lot of things with dinosaurs. One of my favorite things I gave to somebody, I used an old sweater and then I cut up an old piece of fabric into the shape of a dinosaur, rough sewed it onto like the stomach of the front, which is really awkward. And then I put a little circle on the arm, the sleeve on the side, and that represented Pluto because I really like dinosaurs and Pluto and they're both gone. Pluto's obviously not gone, but it's no longer in our solar system.
So what made this awkward sweatshirt so great? You went ahead and knowingly positioned the dinosaur in a place that you felt to be awkward. You had two seemingly unrelated items together. It turned out to be a project you feel fantastic about. What do we, listening to you, learn from that?
I think it's a kind of touching back on the, or if it's handmade, then it's clearly crafty or ugly. But, you know, I don't like things to look perfect. Sometimes I intentionally use fabrics that'll fray a little bit and do things that show that this is a handmade project. I don't ever want my items necessarily to look like you can buy them at Target or something. So I think that's why that one was overtly handmade. There was a strangely cut plaid dinosaur across the stomach of a man's shirt with a circle on the armband.
And apparently it was a hit. Do you think that people have a preference in terms of getting something from you that you made with your own little planet and dinosaur? How do you think they feel about that compared to, you know, getting some cute little thing that you picked up at a box store for them?
Well, I think that if I would have bought the same type of thing in a box store, they would probably use it a little less because it wouldn't be, you know, endearing that I made it for them. And now they think of me as crafty. So even if I make something ugly now, they're like, oh, this is great because Lexi made it, which is great because I can start throwing ugly stuff at them. Poor family. Thank you so much.
So Lexi, are you saying even if we're not really making great stuff, if we just stick with it long enough, people will accept that we're crafty and appreciate it anyway?
Yes, I do believe that, actually. Yeah, I do. I mean, if you just label yourself as crafty for long enough, then they're like, this is great. You've done great. You've done this several times. So this is clearly better than the first one, even if it's not.
Oh, the art shield. Thank goodness for the art shield. You are listening to Through the Eyes of Women. I'm your host, Emma Brakan, and we're talking to Lexi Fisher, Reworkshop Coordinator at Scrap Humboldt. She's helping us uncover the creative genius that lies inside us all. Lexi, tell us the truth. Do you consider yourself to be especially creative?
Perhaps. I guess I'd say I have creativity on my mind often or frequently, maybe more than your average person. So I think I might not be the most creative person, but I sure try to develop it as often as I can.
Would that be true, though, if it wasn't your job to be the Reworkshop coordinator? Would you still have it on your mind, do you think?
Yes. I've had arts, crafts, and creativity on my mind since I was pretty young. So I only acquired this job fairly recently, and that didn't have much to do with my amount of thinking towards creativity.
Would you say that you are especially talented in any particular department?
Yeah, I spend most of my time whenever my hands are doing creative things, doing ceramics. And I also spend a lot of time working with fabric. I sew, I weave braid rugs. Half of my personal room closet is filled with bags of fabric. I'm one of those people.
Ooh, okay, fabric collectors. I'd say most people who sew probably already own more fabric than they're ever going to be able to get to sewing in their entire lifetimes. Do you just take it and figure out the project for it later? Or do you have a system for culling the stuff that you're never going to get around to using?
Well, like I mentioned, I weave braid rugs, which is really easy. They actually eat up a lot of fabric, But that becomes a problem because then I get more fabric for the braid rugs. And now I have like an immense amount of fabric that I totally don't need. Maybe at some point I'll get through it all. Whenever I have the fabric that I dislike at the bottom of the pile, I usually make one really ugly rug. And I'm like, it's a garage rug or it's an outside rug. Who cares? It's useful still, you know? Because I can't donate this stuff. It's a half of a pair of jeans and sweatpants. I just take anything, really. It's sad. So.
And later those become one-of-a-kind handmade rugs.
Yeah, that your dog can sleep on.
That we can learn to make at scrap right here in Arcata.
Yeah, that's true.
So how did you get started making things out of other things?
I started my crafting career, I suppose, if you'd like to call it, in second grade, one of those class-led crafts. I think what I remember was making like this cone-shaped snowman that we glued a felt scarf onto and a little felt hat. And then after that, my sister and I, who is only a couple grades older than me, she and I were pretty much commandeered by our second grade teacher thereafter to make all of the craft projects for her class. So we'd make the demos. So we went in until junior high. We went into our second grade teacher's class and we would help her make all of her craft projects because she actually was not very into the crafting. She very heavily disliked the crafting. And my sister and I loved it and we could just knock it out. So she would provide us with like the little school kits and give us the instructions. And then there would be like all the pieces and the patterns. And we're like, yeah, we make two little demos that we'd make sure looked different and looked great. And she's like, oh my gosh, thank you so much. I would have just dreaded sitting there and doing that. So we did that for her.
And then what happened in junior high, Lexi?
Dun, dun, dun. My parents' house burned down and they decided to rebuild on the same foundation, which was salvaged, and they could rebuild the house. And they knew that I was really into interior design and colors. I had an eye for the thing. And my sister was also a great artist. She would do a lot of 2D. She still does a lot of 2D, you know, painting and drawing. So we both were very artistic. And they told us, you know, you can do whatever you'd like in your room. You can decorate it however you'd like within reason, budget-wise, but you can go to town. And we were like, this is awesome. You know, it's like every kid's dream. So I decided to paint my room avocado green. And I had burgundy carpet. And then I took it from there. I had like all these design elements, like records on one wall. I did all kinds of things with bamboo. It was just so fun. And they just literally let me do whatever I'd like. And they said, you know, we'll leave it up as long as you're here. And then whenever you go off to college or whatever, if we hate it, we'll get rid of it. But if we like it, we'll keep it. We're like, oh, thanks. That's nice. But my problem where I actually took up, you know, I kicked it up crafting wise was I couldn't find a bedspread to match my crazy color palette. And I didn't want a boring one because hell if I was boring. So I asked for a sewing machine and I said, you know, I'd like a duvet and I'd like to make my own duvet cover, which can't be that hard. Really simple. It's like having two sheets sewn together. But I wanted to make it a little better than that. So I couldn't find the right colors. And I said, you know, with my budget for my bedding, can I just buy a sewing machine and fabric and make my own bedding? And they were like, you might be taking it too far. Like, this is taking on a big project. This is a skill. It's not something you can staple together or anything. Sewing's a big deal. So they were like, let's try it. I'm not sure if it's going to work out. And maybe because they didn't think that I could do it well, I just took it on as a challenge. And one day I went with my stepmom. We bought all the fabric and I came back and I cut up all the pieces and they went off to a movie and I started sewing. You know, she gave me a rough tutorial on how to operate one of these sewing machines and it was really easy. And I got a bunch of jams and everything, but I kept on rethreading and fixing it. But I ended up getting my pattern and sewing out one whole side. And they came back and I was like, oh, so what do you guys think about this side of my duvet? And they're like, you did that all while we were at the movies? That's amazing. So they're like, well, we're sorry that we thought you can do this. You're doing absolutely fantastic. And I think the challenge really was what put me over and made me sit there for probably like 4 or 5 hours at once and just get this whole side done. And I put buttons all around the edge, like, oh, the buttoning's the hardest part, using the buttonholer. And I was like, yeah, I'll button like 100 buttons onto this thing, then you'll watch me. So yeah, I started sewing and I've been sewing ever since. And I have the same sewing machine and I love it. And I use it as a tool as often as I can.
Lexi, I'm just trying to think of something I enjoy less than making buttonholes. so we are gearing up for our December gift-giving holidays. Let's just call them that, because there's a lot of different ways to celebrate in December. What can you tell us about some of the gifts that you're planning on giving the people in your life this year?
My family usually receive the newest thing that I'm making. So,
is that a prototype?
Yeah, or just the first few. Like I say, you know, you get better. So they kind of, you know, usually get the first couple of a thing. So for a long time, that's been my ceramics, which everyone may or may not very well know that first time ceramics is pretty hideous and heavy. So they're just really dear people because they still like me. And now I'm getting better, though. So I'm slowly giving each of them a braid rug that I make. And they seem to act like they like those, which is good. Other people like them, so I figure they might. But this year in particular, I'll probably be giving out some of the tile hooks that I make. I used like repurposed knobs and pulls, and I put them onto upcycled pieces of wood, some of them like baseboards and stuff. And then I handmade some tiles and ceramics to add on. So it's like a decorative wall hook. Also, I will be probably giving out quite a few of my Haida books. And those are books that are usually pretty old that I found at a thrift store, and they look really sad and left alone. And then I cut out the center.
I believe we have a Reader's Digest collection here to use as an example.
Yeah, I brought one in, and I really like Reader's Digest because, for one, I never really imagined anybody actually buying a Reader's Digest from the 80s and actually reading it ever again, so I don't feel bad cutting its guts out. I'll cut out the center with like an X-Acto knife or a straight edge and then add a photo or use one of the pictures from the Reader's Digest and put it into the last page, which creates a little hiding space in a book. And when it's closed, it looks like a normal book. So if you want to actually keep it as a hiding space, nobody's ever going to pick a Reader's Digest out of your bookshelf because nobody's going to want to touch it. So yeah, I usually pick books that are particularly distasteful to read and really colorful and pretty, though. You could use them, you know, for hiding. If you're in Humboldt, probably your cash. Or if you're a little kid, you could put your favorite plastic Barbie watch. You know, all kinds of great things can happen with these books. So I'll probably, yeah, just be giving those to every person. And then maybe like in a few years, I'll ask them, like, what did you put in there? Because I'm always really interested to know whenever people either buy these or I give them, like, what do you use those for?
Do they ever tell you that's none of your business?
I'm imagining that might be the case, but I haven't asked yet. I gave a few out a few years ago, and I should just go and like email everybody and say, hey, you know, what are you using those for?
Lexi, is this chick work?
Oh, no, this isn't. One thing that I'm trying to do as a coordinator of Reworkshop at Scrap Humboldt is I've been trying to brainstorm ideas for getting dudes into my workshop. I really want guys in there. I think, you know, we have these pegboards that are really, it looks like a garage with all these tools. We have 18 hammers. Girls don't use those. This is guy tools. So I have quite a few ideas already, but I'm trying to get guys into the space and I'm trying to get guys to teach in the space. I think that's going to help. But, you know, most of the time I'm in Scrap, the overwhelming majority of volunteers, employees, and shoppers at Scrap are women, which is great. And they're great. But I am trying to open up the possibility of Scrap to men and boys. I have a couple ideas. One of my better ideas that I hope to employ this coming February would be a DIY craft, you know, gift making class for Valentine's Day for your girlfriend, because like any girlfriend would prefer a crappy handmade gift over like some roses and chocolates. Like even if you glued together, you know, a cat face on a heart, they'd be like, oh, that's adorable.
And by the way, men, we go to gas stations too, so we know what a gas station teddy bear looks like. Just word to the wise there. What have we got coming up at Scrap in January? What are some of the rework shops that you've got planned for us?
We will be having one of our avid instructors and volunteers, Athena. She's part of Ruin and Redemption is her business name, but she makes jewelry out of just found and discarded materials, a lot of metal and everything. She sells her items in our reboutique in Scrap Humboldt, and she usually teaches a class once a month, so look out for her classes. They're great, and she's incredibly skilled. We will also be, hopefully in the earlier parts of the year, be teaching like an introductory crocheting class. that's probably something we'll be doing. I'll certainly be teaching a class or two on the two different styles of braid rugs that I taught there before, but they seem to be popular classes, so while people continue to ask for them, we will continue to provide them. And, you know, we're always looking for teacher artists to teach in the space that I coordinate for. So if you're really passionate about whatever it is, you know, making button necklaces or macaroni art, we honestly don't care. If you have a skill to bring us or an item that you craft and you want to teach it, or if you even want to suggest that somebody else teaches it, we're into it. We'd like to know. I'd like to know.
And as we get ready to wrap up our time here, there's probably a certain amount of people listening to this show. They're running out of time. They're running out of money. They're trying to put a smile on someone's face. Any words of wisdom or comfort for them as they scramble? They're probably listening to this while they're gluing their fingers together or something.
Yes. A lot of people that have any interest in doing things all themselves, you know, they look online to look for inspiration ideas. And whenever you look for those ideas, Scrap Humboldt's a great place to go to buy all of your materials. And even, you know, you might as well try to ask a person or two there, you're like, hey, I looked this up, and show them your phone and, you know, be that person. But it's okay. And we'll maybe give you a few, you know, small tips maybe on how to glue that thing to that other thing, or, you know, what adhesive to use, or, you know, whether to just sew it, just buck up and use a needle and thread, you know, whatever it is. But it is a great place to find your things, and everybody there is really knowledgeable about, you know, if we don't have it, we'd probably be able to tell you where to find it. And there's all kinds of holiday stuff. If you can just throw a couple holiday things on an item and just remake it into a holiday item, perfect. It's a great place if you're running low on gift wrapping items. We have tons of gift wrapping and tons of everything holiday. So seriously, for the holidays, you should look there before you start spending full price on anything else, anywhere else.
Thank you, Lexi, for being on Through the Eyes of Women. Thanks for giving us a little bit of inspiration. And a heartfelt thank you to everyone out there who has ever asked themselves, what is this, while accepting a handmade gift with a gracious smile. You guys are the greatest. We're going to do a whole lot better for you from now on. Thanks, Lexi.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Through the Eyes of Women. I've been your host, Emma Bracon. We've been speaking with ReWorkshop coordinator Lexi Fisher about Scrap Humboldt. For more information, visit scraphumboldt.org. Through the Eyes of Women is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University. Thanks to our executive producer, audio engineer, and audio editor, Kathleen Marshall. To listen to this program again in the next 2 weeks, go to khsu.org. Click on the web audio, then audio archives. You can also listen to this episode anytime in Through the Eyes of Women's permanent blog archives, where you can learn more about the show, view the upcoming schedule, and post listener comments. Visit the blog at khsuwomen.com and join us again next Monday at 1:30 right here on KHSU.
Next time on Through the Eyes of Women, our guest will be Chandra Kellison, who will be discussing her recent experiences working with Syrian women and girls in a refugee camp in Lebanon. Join me, your host, Corinne Fregoni, on Monday afternoon at 1:30 here on KHSU.